Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Kathleen O., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Northern California. Today is Monday, January 14th, 2019, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are at page XXVIII, the fourth paragraph, third sentence, which starts with, "To them, their alcoholic life seems." We'll be reading through two sentences ending with "drinks which they see others taking with impunity." And we'll be commenting on these two specific sentences. Today's readers are Nancy L. for the 12 steps, Betsy H. will be reading the 12 traditions, and our readers of the text are Kathy Jo P., Susan H., and Kathy G. The share ID for Sunday, January 13th is 12,413, 12413. And for this morning, 7 a.m. Eastern Time is 12,414, 12414. And our newcomer greeter for today is Melanie C. The OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Nancy L. to read the 12 steps.
Thank you, Kathleen. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over compulsive overeating and that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Ten, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Pass.
And thank you, Nancy L. Betsy H., would you please read the 12 traditions?
The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Pass.
Thank you, Betsy H. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and the literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book, and we are on page XXVIII, the fourth paragraph, third sentence, to them, their alcoholic life seems, reading through two sentences ending with drinks which they see others taking with impunity. And we'll be commenting on these two specific sentences. So, Kathy Jo P., good morning. Could you get us started, please?
This is Kathy Jo P., a recovered compulsive overeater from Minneapolis and San Diego today, and I, for the life of me, cannot find this paragraph right now. I might have a Big Book that is different numbers, and I'm feeling terrible, but I am not finding it, and I've been trying.
So
and you said XXVIII,
three I's.
In the doctor's opinion, correct?
Right.
Oh my goodness. And what is at the very paragraph?
So Kathy Jo, the beginning of the paragraph is men and women drink essentially because they like the effect.
One of my favorites, and I can't find it today, and I'm...
You don't see that there? Okay, because we can go with Kathy G, the backup, if you want.
Oh my gosh, I am so sorry.
How about if I read that and Kathy Jo share?
Melanie, you're so awesome.
I don't think that's okay. Melanie. Who is this?
It is Melanie.
Oh, Melanie, sorry. I was thinking of Leah and it didn't sound like Leah. Okay, go ahead, Melanie. Thanks.
Thank you. I hope this is helpful. And then Kathy Jo, you can share. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks which they see others taking with impunity.
All right. Thank you so much, Melanie. Yes. Kathy Jo P. here. I could not take the bite, take the drink, take the sugar, follow the diet. I wanted so hard not to do that, but I kept going back and I kept going back. And it never ended for me. And I remember people saying, you know, if you could just have a little willpower, if you could just have a little bit of it, you'd be such a pretty girl. I wanted to behave. I wanted to do it. I wanted to try harder. And then because I couldn't do it, I would just give up. And I would eat to oblivion, eat to 303 pounds. I needed to take the edge off. I needed to feel that food going down, or the thought of that food, or the sweetness of that food, or the heavy fat satiating feeling that I needed to survive. That's what I needed. And now what I need is a higher power that, well, and I barely want to say to take the edge off, because that's not what I'm looking for anymore. I am trying to be aligned with God and be with God and stay right with God so that I can have the ability, and it's not even me, it's God, to live in peace, to live aligned with my brothers and sisters on this planet, and to keep moving forward. I was at a store this week, and I was cold, so I put on a jacket in the store, and I accidentally wore it home. And I, of course, brought it back. My old self maybe, probably, most likely would have kept the coat. I just can't do that anymore. And that has nothing to do with how much food I put on my plate. That has to do with living differently so I can stay connected to my God. I said a lie this week, and I had to go back and make amends about that and share the truth. So thank you so much, Melanie, for reading for me. Thank you, everyone, for being here. And thank you all for keeping me on this path to stay connected to God.
And thank you, Kathy Jo P. and Melanie, for that obvious solution. Okay, we are going to open up the lines for those who would like to share on those two sentences.
Susan H.
Kara L.
Roz G.
Jackie H.
Sarah C.
Jackie H.
Kara L.
Okay, hold on 1 second. Hold on 1 second, everyone. Here's what I heard. Susan H., Jackie, Roz, Sarah, Kara L. Who did I miss?
Marissa E.
Marissa
Nicole
E.
Nicole C.
Okay, and let's stop right there. Nicole C. And okay, and I think it's Jackie H. Anyway, I'll have to get some more initials, but I have Susan H., I believe it's Jackie H., Roz, Sarah, Kara L., Marissa E., and Nicole C. So go ahead, Susan H.
Good morning. This is Susan H. in Ohio. I am a recovered compulsive overeater and very grateful today. Excuse me. My life of compulsive overeating did seem like the only normal one. I built it carefully over many years. I did my best to hide it from everyone. This contributed in a big way to my isolation. I had a love-hate relationship with isolation. I blamed mankind in general and family and friends in particular for it, then sought it again for the relief of my binge. The feeling of restless, irritable discontent was crippling, and the deep resentment over seeing others take bites without going crazy was awful. The only solution I saw was another binge. It was a hideous cycle I was trapped in. Okay, then the gift of desperation led me here. For today, I work the steps as a recovered compulsive overeater. For today, I have a spiritual awakening as the result. My consciousness of the presence of a higher power is the most important fact of my life. I am turning to my higher power with human emotions and turning to my fellows in program for today. The result is brighter and clearer relief than any ease and comfort I took from the first bite. I'm feeling blessed in my new life and seeking the will of a higher power for today. I'm very grateful to be here, and I pass.
And thank you, Susan H. Okay, Jackie, I believe it's Jackie H., followed by Roz G.
Good morning. Yes, it is Jackie H., recovered in Colorado. Thank you for your service, and it is great to be here. Whew, this morning I was just so, I was listening to the earlier meeting and I felt such gratitude that this was my first, this meeting, Coming to Vision for You, was my first meeting of OA. I never did go to another traditional OA meeting. So I just came in here and I heard all this recovery and I learned early on that food was not my problem. It was my solution. And I'm so grateful for that because I really did think food was my problem. I honestly did. And I tried everything I could do to not get into that, not take that first bite. I did not want to do it. And I tried all kinds of things to manage and organize my food, and nothing worked because food was not my problem. So I get to come in here and was introduced immediately. Here's what you need to do. You need to put your food down, your alcoholic foods down, and you need to do these steps and just trust the process. Don't try to think about it. Don't try to figure it out. Just do it. And I did. And oh my goodness, I had this beautiful psychic change. And today I have a design for living. These steps are in place every single day. I have to put them in place every single day, though. I cannot rest, not one moment, on my laurels. I have to each morning get up and live these steps like I'm going to die if I don't. And so with that, I'll pass and thank you all for your service and have a wonderful, beautiful day.
And thank you, Jackie H. Roz G., it is your turn, followed by Sarah N. Go ahead, Roz.
Yay, thank you. Thank you for hearing my name and thank you for your service. This is Roz G., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Los Angeles. And whenever I read this paragraph and I look down on the sentence that says, the part of the sentence that says, which comes at once by taking, which they see others taking with impunity. I am the middle child of two sisters who do not have eating problems and have, maintained a normal size body weight all their lives. And I was the overweight one in the middle, jealous, angry, watching them succeed while I was falling into a sinkhole. And I have pictures of my eldest sister eating blueberry, like she'd make blueberry muffins with a meal, and they were these little muffins, and she would take a few bites of the muffin, and that was it. She didn't feel that muffin was going to hurt her, and so she can just eat it and toss and say, I don't want any more. And I would look at the rest of that muffin and think, how can she do that? And then my diet mentality would be, well, I'm just going to eat half a muffin because if I eat the whole muffin, it will show up in my stomach. And today, I still have thoughts. Chocolate is a big, it's not my number one, but it's up there. Chocolate. Chocolate releases dopamine, which calms me down. And I don't eat chocolate today, but I know that if I look at chocolate and if I think about eating chocolate, I automatically think of going, oh. I don't think of how it's going to, go into my blood and give me the nutrients that are needed for my blood and that it'll give me an alert mind. I think of how good it's going to make me feel. So, yes, I'm one of those people that certain foods give me that feeling. And I do, and I can watch others eat that food and not feel a thing. So what this tells me is that I do look for ease, comfort, effect from some foods. And as you know, I do enjoy my foods today. I love to eat. But thank you, God, one day at a time and a very close relationship with my higher power I don't participate in those foods. But I still believe that because I'm a human being and not because I have to eat, I might as well enjoy it. So with the help of nutritionists, thank you. With the help of, I'll wrap up with the help of nutritionists and people in program, I'm able to eat sensibly and enjoy my food. Thank you, and I pass.
Okay, thank you, Roz G. And Sarah, did I get your initial right? Sarah N, and you're followed by Kara L.
It was Sarah C.
Sarah C, sorry, Sarah. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. Thank you so much. This is the first time I've shared. So I'm a little bit nervous, but I wanted to just say that for me, I'm an exercise bulimic, and I am a compulsive overeater. And for me, it was the bite, but it was also the exercise that I wanted that gave me relief, that gave me calmness. So I had to not pick up the bite, and I had to not pick up the exercise. As an exercise bulimic, I've heard it described that we, as bulimics, don't take responsibility for our overeating. We don't wear it. So I was never really, really, really overweight because I ran it off. And I just wanted to speak up because I think there are probably a lot of people like me on the line that never really struggled with being really overweight because we ran it off. And having said that, I am a compulsive overeater and an exercise bulimic. And I also see myself as a fish in water, and my water that I wasn't conscious of was overeating, compulsively exercising, and being obsessed with that. That was the water that this fish me swam in. And as soon as I was out of that water and found recovery, it was pretty uncomfortable, just like you see a fish that gets taken out of water gets pretty damn uncomfortable. And, you know, the fish needs to be back in the water. I don't need to be back in my compulsive behaviors around food and exercise. So I just wanted to speak to that because I do think that there are probably a lot of people on the line who, like me, never have taken responsibility for the amount of food that we eat and from my experience that I have eaten because I've run it off or I've swum it off or I've never liked vomiting, so that just was never part of my eating disorder. But exercise bulimia was huge, and it brought me to my knees. It brought me to the realization because I had to come clean this summer. I was weak. I was grossly underweight because I hadn't been honest with my nutritionist about how much I was exercising, and I was sick from it. And so I've had to work at gaining some of the weight back. And it wasn't until I was brought to my knees with the exercise bulimia that I was humbled and completely surrendered to the fact that I am an addict. And my addiction is food and exercise. So with that, I'll pass.
And thank you, Sarah C. Kara L., you're up, followed by Marissa E.
Good morning. This is Kara L. in Southern California, a recovered compulsive overeater. And I knew I had to share today because out of every line in the big book, this is my absolute one that just changed my life. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. I had no clue. And I had read this line before, and it was in rereading it. It just hit me that, oh my goodness, what I think is normal may not be. And it just never had occurred to me. It was life changing when I read that. And I still, every single time when I read doctor's opinion and I get to that line, I'm still, my breath goes out of me and I go, oh my goodness. And today, I know that with recovery, I have a choice. My normal life, what I think is normal, is myself well. And when I am in God's will, life is easy and joyous. And there's a choice. I never knew as I moved through the day that I could stop, that I could reach towards God, that I could ask for help, that I could identify what was going on with me and my part. My choice, I just thought I always had to go to food, or I had to go to controlling behaviors, or I had to go to other behaviors. And I never, it wasn't until that I worked the steps again, vigorously, honestly, with a vision, that I was like, I have a choice. I no longer have to come to these moments in my day and be so, what do I do? I don't know what to do. And I ate, and I used it because that was the only thing I knew. It's the only normal thing I knew. And today I know when I get agitated, irritable, restless, discontent, that I can stop. I can identify what's going on. I can call a fellow. I can write it out. I can turn towards God and ask for help. It's really a miracle in my life, and I'm ever so grateful. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Kara L. Marissa E., you're up next, followed by Nicole C.
Good morning, Kathleen. Good morning, my fellows. This is Marissa E., outside Los Angeles, recovered compulsive overeater. I remember when I went through this with my sponsor, we talked about how they are restless, irritable, and discontented, and abstinent, right? I was the most abstinent that I could be before I took that first compulsive bite. And I couldn't take it. I couldn't take that restlessness, the irritability, and the discontent. And I was listening to the earlier meeting, and it came to me that, unfortunately for me, as a compulsive overeater, right, I have the allergy of the body, I have the obsession of the mind, and when I take that first bite, I don't get ease and comfort, right? You know, maybe for 9 seconds, but then what do I get? I get dis-ease and discomfort. I remember so vividly, I went to the movies with my two sisters, my mom and dad, and my husband, and we got the, you know, bottomless popcorn. And they're all, I look to my left and I look to my right, and they're all eating it and in ease and comfort. And I ate, I had some, right? And what was the difference is that I triggered the allergy, and it was a late movie. And I remember when we got home, they all went to bed, and I stayed up and I just ate and ate and ate and ate. Right? I do not get ease and comfort from the food. I get dis-ease and discomfort. And it took putting down the food, right, getting entirely abstinent, and working these steps with the desperation of a drowning woman for me to discover that, because I couldn't see it before. It seemed so normal, right? It was like I was wearing like blurry glasses. And this process, it just helped clean them up. So now I can see clearly that when I go to the movies next time and I look to my left and I look to my right, right, I'll remember and I'll have the sanity to know that that won't bring ease and comfort. And I'm just grateful for that awareness. And thank you for letting me share. I pass.
And thank you, Marissa E. And just a reminder, we are on page XXVIII. We're in the fourth paragraph, the third sentence, to them their alcoholic life seems. We're reading two sentences today, ending with drinks which they see others taking with impunity. We're commenting specifically on those two sentences. And we'll be taking some names after Nicole C. shares. So Nicole C., go ahead, please.
Thank you. This is Nicole C. in California, Northern California. My compulsive eating life absolutely seemed the only normal one. I can remember many times where my mom and I would go somewhere for a treat in the afternoon, like maybe after school or on the weekend or something. And she would always get the small or the extra small or the kid size. And I would always say the biggest one, extra large, super size, whatever it was. Right, whatever it was they were getting, I needed the biggest one, because I don't think I was aware of this at the time, but I was afraid of not having enough. And I remember her saying to me, clear as yesterday, that, why do you have to get the big one? Isn't the small one enough? And I would just always feel this shame, like, I don't understand. Like, why wouldn't I be able to get the big one? Like, I was more baffled that she would get the small one. Like, is she, I actually thought, is she secretly going home and having more? Like, does she have more stashed away somewhere? When I was very young going to birthday parties, and my mom would take me to birthday parties with other kids, I actually got scolded from reaching my hand out and grabbing what was put on the table too early because I couldn't restrain myself. And I have been to parties as an adult where I have literally hovered around the appetizers and have put so much on my plate to make sure that other people don't get it before me. And I've had anxiety going to events where I don't want to be the last table called. Like, I have to be the first table because there's not going to be enough for me. That to me seemed like the only normal life. Like, everybody lives like this. We're all competing for food. We all want this the same way. And after I came to OA and everything, I started to realize that that's not how everybody feels. That's not how everybody thinks. Not everybody sees food like that. And I've tried this without OA. I've tried not eating. I've white-knuckled it and have been an absolute pain in the butt to people around me because I've been so restless, so irritable, so discontented because of, you know, for a year going without, you know, to fit in my wedding dress or whatever it was, throwing things at people. Thank you. Throwing things at people just in rage because I didn't have a program to treat my compulsive eating. And so I very much relate to this, these couple sentences. Thank you for letting me share. I pass.
And thank you, Nicole C. Okay, who else would like to share on these two sentences?
Carrie K.
Lisa J.R.
Patty T.
Stephanie N.
Ellen B.
Bonnie M.
Hold on. Sorry. I got Carrie, Lisa J.R. Who was after Lisa J.R.?
Patty.
Bonnie M.
Patty.
Ellen B.
Is that, who is
Bruce
that man?
E.
Wait. Hold on.
Bonnie M.
Hold on, please. Who was before Bruce, the man before Bruce?
Ellen B.
I'm not hearing the name. I hear a B initial, so we'll go with that for now.
Sounds
okay,
like Aaron, or sounds like Aaron.
Okay, we are going to. Okay, Aaron D. Sorry, thank you. We're going to stop there because we're going to run out of time. So I have Carrie, Lisa J.R., Patty, Kathy G., Bonnie, Aaron D., and Bruce, and we're probably not going to get to all of you, but go ahead, Carrie.
Thank you so much.
Is it
Good
Carrie?
Morning, everybody. It's Carrie K.
Carrie K. Okay, thanks, Carrie.
From Boulder, Colorado. And the sentence that I wanted to talk on was when they see people taking drinks with impunity. And I could never understand the people that could have that one donut or that one piece of chocolate and be happy and content and think that was delicious and then go on about their day. Because I ate it and I was like, that was delicious. I have to have more. And then I had to have more and more and more and more until finally I'd say, well, I've obviously blown it for today. I should eat everything I want, but I'll do better tomorrow. And the people that would come in and take a donut and cut it into a quarter and eat a quarter, like, why are you doing that? Because I would then go in and clean up all those little leftover bites and quarters and halves until I probably had 16 donuts. And I just couldn't understand why I was unable to stop and be happy with just that one bite. How could they eat with impunity? I knew I was an emotional eater, but I didn't understand until I came into the rooms and read the earlier part of the doctor's opinion with the discussion about not only the mental aspect of this disease, but the physical aspect, the allergy, the abnormal response, that when they take a bite, they enjoy it and they move on. And when I take a bite, it triggers that abnormal response, that allergy to my alcoholic foods, And boy, do the cravings take over my head and my body and my life. And all I want to do is eat more and more and more. So realizing that I'm not one of those people who can eat with impunity was so important. I'm not a normal eater. I never will be. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I have this physical reality that causes me to overeat. And as long as I remember that and realize that my norm is not the norm, I can stay on track. And with that, I pass.
And thank you, Carrie Kay. Lisa J.R., you are up next, followed by Patty T.
Thank you so much for your service. Lisa J.R. here from Baltimore, gratefully recovered. So to them, their alcoholic life seems the normal one. Well, I was living in the three D's, denial, didn't even know I'm lying. Then I shifted into delusion. I believed my own lies. And then outright defiance. Yeah, you know, I'm doing it. It works for me. So I stayed in that for about 40 some years, you know, waking up at 3:30 in the morning, going running before work, going running after work, thinking, gee, you know, this is normal. Everybody does this. Although I rarely ever pass somebody on the sidewalk at 3 o'clock jogging. I actually got mugged once at 3 in the morning and got away from the guy. And my solution wasn't to stop running in the dark at 3:30 in the morning. It was to get a pit bull to go running with me. So I was crazier than a hoot owl back then, but didn't even know it. So I wasn't restless, irritable, and discontented until I actually broke my feet and my solution didn't work for me. And I went through those PMS or fat pants within a week. I was still eating the same amount of food and I couldn't stop. So boy, did I shift into being pissed off when I couldn't eat my food. And I love this definition of impunity: immune from the detrimental effects of an action or exempt from punishment. Yeah, I was feeling that way. Oh, you know, I just must burn it off, you know, totally in delusion. And when I couldn't live that way anymore, I was so angry at everyone I saw eating the treats that I so, you know, made such a lifetime of binging on. So yeah, you know, thank God for these steps, because I would probably be dead now. And I thank you, and with that I'll pass.
And thank you, Lisa J.R. And you're all taking a little under 3 minutes, which is great, because maybe we can get all these names. So Patty T, you're up next, followed by Kathy G.
Hi, happy Monday, everybody. It's Patty T from Southern California, recovered today by the grace of God. You know, when I see this phrase, others taking with impunity, I'm reminded how it looked to me from a very early age. I was in the food at a very early age, and it takes me back to the sentence right before this passage, where it says we couldn't differentiate the true from the false. I didn't realize as a child, and actually as an adult for the most part of my life, that my normal was addiction. I saw other people taking, you know, a couple of pieces, bites of a piece of cake and passing it on, or a half a donut or something. And to me, half a dozen donuts was the same thing. You know, I thought my truth was that I just liked the taste of this stuff. But it took coming into program, it took 5 years of back-to-back abstinence and a major relapse requiring outside help and this big book for me to understand that the reason I ate was for the effect, that because I was restless, irritable, and discontented unless I could gain that moment after eating my binge. That was the only thing that could settle those feelings inside which I thought would kill me, and only to recognize in abstinence, I mean, in relapse, when I could not stop, but had, you know, like once you get into program, you can't unsee the truth. Once you've been in program, even if you're relapsed, and even if you're in the food, you can't unsee what you know is true anymore. And that was my experience. I knew I was killing myself. I knew I was eating for the effect. I wasn't sure why, but I mean, I knew I was unhappy, but I no longer looked at other people eating with impunity. I just knew that the way I ate was not the same way they ate. And I had to learn that from relapse. And I had to learn it a few times. And then I found this meeting, this abstinence, and this fellowship. Thanks for letting me share.
And thank you, Patty T. Kathy G., you're up next, followed by Bonnie C. Or Bonnie G., sorry.
Thanks.
Go ahead, Kathy.
Thanks, Kathleen, and good morning, everyone. It's Kathy G., recovered compulsive overeater in Illinois. And I wanted to take a second after this reading to just give an example of recovery in action that I had this weekend. When we read about restlessness, irritable, and discontent, you know, that can still crop up even in recovery because I have an illness and sometimes my thinking can get a little bit off. I was at a Blackhawks game in Chicago. My husband's company has a box and we were in there with all these people, and I can still sometimes be uncomfortable in social situations like that. So I felt myself, as they were all drinking and eating with impunity, getting a little bit restless and uncomfortable. So what I did, because I now know as a result of a spiritual awakening and a psychic change, having done these steps, thank God, I know that when I feel that way, I have to take action. So I went into the restroom, I said the Serenity Prayer, and then I got my phone, I stepped out into the hallway, and I made a program call. And I talked about what I was feeling, I committed, I'm finished with my food, and then I asked God how I could go back in and be of maximum service to the people in there. And I went in, and I had a wonderful rest of the evening. So I'm just so grateful that we now have a solution for living. And when we do get restless, irritable, or discontent, we can take action toward that solution. So thanks so much. Have a great day. I pass.
And thank you, Kathy G. Okay, Bonnie G., you're up next, followed by Aaron D. Go ahead, Bonnie. Star one to unmute, Bonnie. All right, I'll come back to her. Aaron D., can you press star one to unmute and share?
Hi, this is Aaron D. from Maine. Thank you for letting me share. You know, like many of you, I find this particular passage to be so crucial to my recovery. And I have many times experienced the resentment that sometimes comes with watching people who could eat with impunity. You know, it seems that they suffered no consequence, and yet I did, you know. And, you know, but what I realized, too, is that in those situations when I'm struggling with watching people, you know, I'm probably forgetting that I have a higher power that I can turn to. And also that I have a sponsor that I can call, and having God, that's what I call my higher power. You know, having God to be able to turn to and to ask Him to remove whatever resentment or selfishness I'm experiencing, and having that sponsor to turn to. You know, even if I find I'm just leaving a voicemail occasionally, you know, to do it as a step 10 call. I mean, that's amazing. You know, it's a reminder to me that I've got a disease, but I also have the tools now in this program to manage it, you know. Part of what is tough, you know, for me, though, as a man, especially dealing with compulsive overeating, is that there's not a lot of other guys to talk to about this, and God has blessed me with a male sponsor, even as a recovered person, you know, I still struggle sometimes to watch people take, you know, watch people eat with impunity. But those times are times now that have become opportunities for me to turn more intentionally to my higher power and to reach out to my sponsor. And with that, I'll pass.
And thank you, Aaron D. So, Bruce E., go ahead.
That's me. Thank you, Bruce E., recovered in Southwest Florida. Glad to be on the line. Thanks for all the recovery I'm hearing and all the solution that I'm hearing. It's great. Let's see. Normal one, the only normal one. Well, let's see. It sure wasn't it wasn't normal when I was out there compulsively overeating, although I probably thought it was. And the reason, my mind wouldn't tell me, hey, this isn't, you got to shape up here, you got to get with it, because, I could go on compulsively overeating and thinking that's normal, but if I thought it wasn't normal, then I had to find a solution. I didn't have a solution, and I didn't have the way out, you know? And so I had to go on doing that, and I was irritable and discontent all the time. And sometimes even in recovery, I get that way, but I notice when I get that way, and I can go back to making calls and reading the literature and talking to people about it, getting on the line. You know, so I got a solution now. But back then, irritable and discontent, I was that way most of the time, and especially when I, as soon as I put the food down and the allergy, then the phenomena of craving comes in. I'm irritable and discontent until I can pick up some more food. Then I'm irritable and discontent from that because I feel guilty and shameful. And then I don't know what to do. So I don't know the way out. So this is the way out. This program's the way out. It worked for me. I found a way out. I'm recovered now. Thank you. And I pass.
And thank you, Bruce E. So Bonnie, are you still with us? If you are and you want to share still, can you press star 1?
Hi, this is Bonnie M. I think that was...
Oh, Bonnie M.
You might have got
okay,
the last
I probably
initial
put the wrong,
wrong
initial. Yes,
yeah.
I did. Thank you, Bonnie.
And so I waited for Bonnie G. I thought maybe I missed her.
I'm sorry.
Anyway,
okay,
I'm Bonnie
ahead.
M. I'm from Arizona, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. And, you know, I can say ditto to what everybody else has said. But I think I really want to just acknowledge the fellowship, because I've been in this program a long time, and the first thing I was told was trust the process, and my process has not been a real smooth one, but trust the process kept coming up in my brain. And at some point I really realized that, you know, God gave me this body, and I am not my body. My body is my house, and it's my job to take care of my house. And on my own, I couldn't take care of my house. But this program has offered me so many options to take care of my house and to love it. And, you know, what are relationships about anyway? They're about learning and growing in love. And somehow the disease and the irritable and discontent, it's there, and it can come up from time to time. But my job is, okay, Bonnie, what's the loving response today? What's the loving response to this? And inevitably, it's to go to the steps, to go to you. And I just think we've been given such an amazing gift. And with that, I want to pass.
Okay, thank you so much, Bonnie M. Now, we're now going to close, and you know, thank you everyone who shared these great shares this morning. I want to give a special thanks to our readers this morning, Nancy L., Betsy H., Kathy Jo P., Susan H., and Kathy G., and we're now going to close the reading with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. So, Susan H., will you please read A Vision for You?
I would love to. Thank you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.